You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And today I've got an incredible guest on. I've heard about him for a long time. I'm so glad you guys are going to be listening and watching today. We've got Dr. Doug Thompson. And in a world of dentistry where you're trying to grow your practice, differentiate yourself from what might be going on in the rest of the world of dentistry, no one can ignore some of the trends that are happening in dentistry when it comes to inflammation, an airway conversation. We talk about gut health, and today we've got one of those incredible experts on here to just kind of paint the way for us and give us a little light to this subject. And I'm going to ask you, Doug, to introduce yourself, because people are going to want to hear your story, and I even want to know a little bit more about your story. And then I'm going to ask you a ton of questions, and I know you have some things to say, but if somebody were to ask, who's Dr. Doug Thompson, give us a little bit of your story, who you are, and where you're from.
Thanks for so much for having me on the show today. My story really started, I was a lab technician actually for 12 years before I went to dental school. And when I went to dental school, I just wanted to do a little bit more with my career. And when I went to dental school, I really got involved in the microbiology of kind of caries and periodontal disease. It was really interesting to me, kind of fascinating. So I graduated from dental school. I did a one-year residency at a VA hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I graduated from the University of Michigan. I have a private practice in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, which is a Detroit suburb. And there I started to really look and work hard on our periodontal analysis of patients' health. And what happened to me there, Kurt, just in private practice, is I started to really changed the way I looked at gum disease and how it related to systemic health. Kind of a funny story. I was moved by a Valpak coupon that came in the mail, and it was a pretty expensive tooth cleaning. And I flipped the thing over, and it was for my cat. And so I started to realize, you know, the veterinarians were doing a better job at educating our patients than we were. And so I really that journey, and then a combination of studying at the Coy Center in Seattle, Washington, as a younger dentist, younger to dentistry, really launched a trajectory for me into discussing areas of patients' health with them that maybe were a little bit beyond the teeth, but very tooth-related. So what I would say is we became really keen about how oral conditions affect systemic health, and I rebranded my practice some time ago into integrative oral medicine. And it wasn't the greatest name because you didn't really know what it meant. And back when I did that 10 years ago, that word integrative wasn't being used as much as it is today. But the message is clear now that the body is integrated significantly with mouth conditions. And we've become really quite savvy about having conversations with patients about that. And it's taken me really to share the story all over the world. with people about what we do in practice, how we do it. And I used to think it was kind of hokey to say that, you know, dentists were saving people's lives, but you would not believe how many little notes I get back or little correspondences I get back. And I think if I had to, if somebody had to drop off in the next 2 minutes and I had to sum up what the big key is, having a wellness approach to your dental practice really builds value. It builds loyalty and stickiness. And I don't think I need to tell you, Kirk, we're in a time in dentistry where it's getting harder and harder to compete with fees and other things. And so if you want to differentiate a little bit and stand out, I mean, I recommend a couple things. Advanced continuum dental education. And if you move into that wellness area, you'll be handsomely rewarded.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Now, we have a lot of students that watch these and listening, and younger dentists that are just getting out there, and you've seen a lot of stuff. I mean, you have some extensive CE experience. Can you ever remember a more exciting time to be a dentist?
It's amazing. There are so many opportunities, and I even talk to young people who want to specialize, and I said, just be sure you want to specialize, because, you know, we have general practitioners now that are doing a beautiful job. Even working in collaboration with specialists, placing implants and doing complex dental procedures. And you could go into any area you want to go into, pediatric dentistry, airway focused dentistry, this health and wellness piece. You can just be a great restorative dentist if you want to do that. There's so many options. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And Kurt, to your point, when I was a lab technician, I just felt like I wasn't doing enough. Now I don't feel like I can keep up. You know, every 20 minutes, there's another paper coming out about some relationship. And so I think what we need to do is, a lot of us don't need really more information. We need to figure out how to use the information that we already have better. And because there's the information solid, and, you know, the oral cavities now, there's 57 associative diseases that's being researched with oral health in one way or another. So there's a plethora of opportunity out there for us.
Like, for the young dentist, you know, Doug, what I always like to do is start with the why behind this, because a young dentist might be watching this and go, why? And this is my belief, but in 25 years of watching dentistry, there's two trends that are the most exciting. You obviously have the airway issue. Then you've got the inflammation systemic thing, like beat the heart attack gene. I mean, this information, we used to think it could be, and now we have more information to know that it is linked. And that accompanied with the whole, how do I make money? You know, like, so let's start with the first part. Like, these trends are going to be very important for a dentist in the future to become part of that, you know, that integrative part where you will be changing and saving people's lives.
Well, you know, Kirk, I think your patients are expecting it. The patients are hearing all these things. If you go, you know, go to any social media page, or go to WebMD, or go look at any of these web services that provide health information, there's article after article coming back. I think people forward me two this morning, one from a diabetes association and another one off WebMD, talking about how the mouth is related. So I think if a patient walks into a dentist office today and it's not even mentioned, or there's no visuals in the office or anything to even suggest that you're thinking that way, I think it's going to start to date you. And so I really think that not only is it the right thing to do from a responsibility standpoint, it's something that I think your patients are expecting. And if I could say three things about the movement, it is still a little bit unique and it's early. It's extremely relevant to health. And it just so happens it's so well backed by research, it's true. So when we have those three things working for us, it's pretty hard to not try to find a way to dribble this conversation in. And to your point about beat the heart attack gene, if I were a young dentist today and I only had to do one thing, I'd put beat the heart attack gene book in my windowsill, and I'd have patients ask me, why do I have that book in a dentist office? Right. That would be enough right there to initiate conversation. And you could say something like, you know, I don't really know. I don't really understand the whole mechanism, but I know the mouth is related and we're going to do a better job making sure you're healthy. That's all you got to say. People will say, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I just have a dentist from South Carolina, just got back from seeing Dr. Bale. I go, how was it? He said, Kirk, he probably saved my life. Like, I'm not kidding. Because what he did for me, he understood me more than just giving me a statin and saying good luck type of a thing. So, and he had his mom go, he's got his wife going. He's got like, all, now he's sending everybody there. And he's just like, I just understand so much more. And I couldn't agree with you more.
It's amazing. So the other part of my story is the journey into heart attack and stroke prevention started with Dr. Bale and Dr. Dean probably more than 10 years ago. And I remember one of their San Antonio courses, I think I brought 17 dentists. So I've been a repeated person as part of their program, and I've taught and lectured in their program, as well as we have our own wellness course at the Coy Center. That's another beautiful place to gain some information. And other continuums are starting to have wellness courses as well. I'm involved with the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health. That's a great place to rub shoulders with people that are thinking this way and moving down that pathway. And I'm part of the strategic planning committee for them, and we're trying to come up with a more of a defined health and wellness curriculum so that people can, you know, have a guided path to their journey of learning. So I think, Kirk, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity today, and there's a plethora of resources for how to get started.
Yeah. So let's jump in at, as far as how, let's say I'm a 32-year-old dentist listening to this. Doug, where do I start? Like, what, give me some thought patterns and some thinking, like how should I start conditioning my thinking now?
Yeah, the best thing to do, Kirk, would get your team together and find out how your team feels about this oral health, this oral systemic movement, because you're a dentist and you have to continue to do what you do. But what we would, I mean, restorative care, and we have to pay the bills and that kind of thing. What I'd really like to do is I'd like to see your staff get trained up to a point to where they could start to have soft conversations with patients. And where we should start is on our periodontal disease protocols and what we have today that we didn't have 15 years ago, or that wasn't as accessible, are great metrics. We can use salivary diagnostics. We can do things that measure biofilm in patients' mouth, and we can start to relate biofilm with how they react, their host susceptibility to biofilm, and we can start to have patients understand that some of the diseases and some of the things they're suffering with really, number one, isn't their fault. And number two, we really can stabilize it. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a lot of the studies, our profession, dentistry, I would say, is not doing the best job at using dental codes that suggest we're treating periodontal disease that match the prevalence data of the disease. You know, if 50% of the people have the disease, then you should be able to walk into any practice and have 30, 40% perio codes. And if it's over 5%, it's a lot right now today.
I agree with you. Why do you think that is? Like, is it the lack of education? Is it the lack of understanding? Like, what? Because I see that all the time too. But why? Why is it such a huge problem?
There's several reasons. One is for sure there's a lack of education about how to initiate a good, strong periodontal policy in the practice. Two, you're relying on other people. We have to rely on hygienists and assistants. And there's some dynamite. I mean, there's no more passionate healthcare providers. In our practice, I refer to them as periodontal therapists. There's no more passionate people than them. However, they have to be led and trained. And face it, Kirk, I mean, a lot of dentists are just in the other room killing it with crown and bridge and implant dentistry, and they really don't focus on that part of their practice. But if you have a good leader, or you can bring in somebody who can help lead your hygiene team, we need to train up our teams, because the hygiene department and the periodontal services department is really the gateway to help establish how we're going to handle this. And if your periodontal therapists aren't talking about it, it's not going to happen in your practice. And if you don't coach and guide it and lead it, in other words, support them, then it still won't happen in practice. So those are two reasons. The third reason is financial. And I think a lot of practitioners are insecure about either offering services that insurance won't cover, or they're totally insurance driven. And what the cat coupon taught me was the veterinarian explained to me the benefits of removing the bacteria around my cat's teeth before they showed me the fee or the price. And I think what we really need to do is we need to just start to have a brief health education. And you're going to have patients in any demographic that want to be healthier. And if you have somebody that wants to be healthier, I've shifted the conversation from saying you need to do more on your teeth to me saying, I think we need to do more for you, because you've been coming in here bleeding for a long time. And you know what? I think you don't have a learning disability. I think we could do more for you. And maybe give us the opportunity to do that. Let me map out a plan for you and let's talk about it.
I love that. Now, back in the 70s, before, you know, I even got there was a guy by the name of Dr. Bob Barkley, and he said one thing that most people are finding too, like the more perio people did, the more restorative they did. That's another like clear, people get healthier when you do more perio. Would you agree?
No question. And if you have a nice program and you have a nice policy and you create a separate periodontal consultation to talk to the patient about the severity of the disease and you start to clean up their mouth, that many will feel it. They'll tell you that. Many will tell you that their spouse said their breath is better. They feel better. The other thing that will happen is they'll trust you. It's more, you know, you create a level of loyalty and trust and confidence that's like no other. And then when you do make other recommendations, I would say there's more treatment acceptance. And, you know, the other thing, Kirk, that I think we have to be really careful of, especially in the world of more income-driven dentistry. I don't want to use the word corporate dentistry, but more, you know, bottom-line dentistry is we really need to provide for patients everything they need and nothing they don't. And many times, the lack of us having conversations, patients are sitting there with dental benefits that are being underutilized. I mean, why get two profies a year when you could have somebody getting four periodontal maintenance procedures per year? Right. So we're even underutilizing insurance because we're not mentioning and we don't have the skills and the language and the comfort to talk to patients about early disease.
Now, I've had Uchi Odiatu on here many times. Yeah. Uchi says all disease starts in the gut. So it's all fun to watch this to get together.
You know, Kurt, I hate to be so crude, you know, but there's two holes and it's really all inside, you know, it's really still outside all the way through. Okay. And there's millions of barriers and these barriers are controlled by microorganisms, and obviously that's how we have digestion. And if we have a dysbiosis, if we have an imbalance of the biofilm and the biofilm turns pathogenic, then there's a really good chance that we're going to have pathogenic trails throughout the system and we're going to have issues with our gut. And so what we like to do is we really try to take care of both at the same time if we can, but you know, I haven't collected a lot of stool samples in my practice recently, so I don't, you know, so sometimes we need to collaborate with physicians to do that. So the idea is we should be aware that if somebody has an oral dysbiosis, there's a good chance they have a sinus issue, they have a gut issue as well, and we want to evaluate or have a methodology for evaluating all of that. And by the way, Kirk, if we don't have good tests, if we don't have, you know, maybe a bona fide metric to use, we should have good questionnaires. Because we should be able to learn a lot just by asking patients questions because we don't have medical licenses. And, you know, sometimes we feel uncomfortable ordering tests outside the scope of our practice. And I have some training in anti-aging medicine, so I feel pretty comfortable doing a few things like that. But I still rely on collaborative relationships with physicians. It's very valuable to develop those, and you need them.
That's one thing I'm going to ask you about, okay? Because if I'm watching you and I'm tracking you and listening, I'm like, most people would agree with everything you said. And maybe I'm a young dentist and I'm stuck at this point because I'm like, okay, Doug, I get it. But how do I collaborate with physicians? Because sometimes you can't even get them to engage in a conversation. How have you done it, or what would you say to me? And secondly, the monetization of this, like, okay, I get it. I believe in wellness, but like, I still got to pay debt. So let's start with the physician playing nice with other doctors. Give us insight on that.
One of the tips that I would give to anybody listening is when you use salivary diagnostics, it's basically a biofilm test, and physicians understand metrics. They understand measurables. They understand tests. So what I did, Kirk, early on is I called physicians and I talked to them about the antibiotic selection or my treatment protocol, or does my patient have any other diseases that might be affected that, you know, because sometimes, you know, we get a straight line through the medical history. Like, they don't think we need to know about their medical history because we're dentists. So I would have this little collaborative conversation that would last 3 to 5 minutes with a physician, and they were very receptive. And what physicians would then start to do is send me cases back and say, hey, this patient I think might have an oral problem. Could you evaluate it for me? Even though they had another dentist. So I'd be very courteous of that relationship, but I would evaluate that for them. And over the years, the collaborative relationships just got more solid. And pretty soon cardiologists refer for AFib and people for sleep testing, and people refer for joint replacement and knee replacement. And now they refer for things like elevated cardiovascular biomarkers that we would learn about at the Bill Donin preceptorship course. And you know, a physician can't control the A1C and they would refer for that. So the referrals are coming in very differently now. But in the beginning, it started because we built trust and we built an image of doing really sound periodontal science with treating the disease, and the physicians understand that. So that's how I would start to do that. And then, Kirk, to answer the second part of your question, you can imagine if there's so much relationship between the mouth and health, and you have patients that a physician says, I think they should get an evaluation by a competent dentist who can evaluate this. These patients have other illnesses. They have other issues, and they have other problems like caries. They have other problems like attrition. They have other problems like sleep apnea. And so what happens is, and I would use three examples out of our teaching, is that I had one guy referred to me. He came to me for an HPV test and I ended up doing a full mouth reconstruction on him. Another person came because he was referred by a chiropractor who wanted a dentist who knew how to work with somebody that had a heart stent. And he did spend $68,000 in my practice. So you're going to get these kind of cases. I had someone referred for A1C that spent $37,000. So this is how you're going to monetize that. But here would be my closing line on that. You are not going to monetize this movement by a single dental code. You're going to monetize it by a reputation and a brand. That's how you're going to monetize it. And it's going to come back in droves to you if you do it that way. It's not going to be by working the code book harder. It's going to be by creating a brand and a reputation, which is then going to allow you to open the code book and do a lot more procedures. That's the idea.
I totally agree. If you're going to do this for money, it's the wrong reason. It's got to be a core values, like I believe it, number one, and you got to be in it for the long haul. And really, I mean, I've heard this from so many people. Do you think there'll be anyone that knows patients better than a dentist in the future? Because MDs don't have the time to do this. Even if you find a concierge medicine-based doctor, I don't even think they would pull this kind of information or get this intimate with patients in the future.
Yeah, it was an Inside Dentistry. It was a study quite a few years ago. I think it was a 2012 or 2013 study. But 72% of our patients see us pretty regularly. You know, they're consistent. But only 53% of people see physicians consistently. So what does that mean? There's 27 million people a year that are going to see a dentist and not see a physician. So you're going to have a great opportunity. You're going to have a great opportunity to have somebody sitting in front of you that has a disease process going on. And if you just have a little bit of awareness of how to identify maybe a couple of signs of that, or maybe know a couple of questions to ask, or in our teaching, and I'll talk a little bit about the Wellness Dentistry Network as we get closer to the end of our time together. But we encourage not only this networking, but we need to have methodologies, questions that we can ask people that would tip us off to think, oh, no, something's wrong. As a matter of fact, I have a webcast I'm going to be doing with, as one of my guests is Dr. Joel Kahn, who somebody you should have on your show, actually, at some point. Dr. Joel Kahn's going to talk with me about what I referred a simple patient to him because he had some risk factors for heart attack and stroke, and he had periodontal disease. And this gentleman ended up to be in a world of trouble. And he's on a different trajectory now just because of identifying a couple things. It can even be visual signs, anything from, you know, overweight to, you know, something going on with your ear to something, right, Fluoride ice granules. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can look at to tip that off, but we have to learn about it first.
Yeah. Now, don't hate me for the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I'm assuming you're mostly fee for service and you're, But Doug, you can imagine, we work with a lot of young dentists. Like, I've got a couple in Texas. They have 3,000 patients. They're 100% PPO.
Yeah.
Even not even the best PPO. So, like, and I encourage them, go to COIS, go to Spirit, like, go get that education. And then they all feel kind of stuck in the mud. They're like, but Kirk, I have 100% of my practice PPO. And I think, I know what the answer will be. I mean, we got to move away from that. But, like, what would you say to a kid that would say that to you? Like, where would just start slowly, make the commitment long term? And a lot of these procedures are going to be, they won't be covered by insurance. And it's going to have to be it's more about communication. Wouldn't you agree?
Totally. And I think there's every single patient in every practice that will spend a little bit of money out of their pocket. So if I was a young person and I could afford, you know, $10 on my healthiest patients, I would give them Michael Gelb's gas book. Or I would hand them Beat the Heart Attack Gene, or I would hand them the Inflammation Syndrome, or the Chronic Cough Enigma, or Blood Sugar 101. I would hand them a simple $8 paperback, and I would hand it to him, and I would say, you know, I want to give this to you, and I'd like you to look at it, and if there's anything I can provide for you or help you, I would like to do that. I have so many people. I would think of the book as a business card, and I would put a little bookmark, a personalized bookmark in there, and I would start to build a reputation that I'm concerned. I would just build a reputation that I'm concerned, and then if I were in a PPO practice, I would learn where in that PPO fee table book where there's anything health and wellness related that I could potentially even start to code for. I mean, we can code for in-office A1C testing. We can code for quite a few different things now, and it's coming around. And So I think I would start to learn that way, and I would realize that I'm not only making an investment in my patient's health, but I'm going to develop a reputation that might allow me to differentiate a little bit. Or maybe I work one day a week someplace else where it's not PPO, or I start, you know, some other way. And then the other thing I would say, Curtis, go and take, you know, I know intimately our course at the Coy Center, take a course that starts doing testing on you, a Bale Donin course where you can go and learn what you should do and do this stuff on yourself and find out if you're healthy. Because once you learn that you might not be as healthy as you think, it personalizes that for you and it becomes part of your being. And then you start to just, it's easy to talk about.
Yeah. We're going to create some curiosity for you, but you have to find out what a cat in the gutter is. It's a very powerful.
I know what that is.
He spent a day describing it to us, and I was like, he is so spot on, because it's the plaque that, you know, it's the runner that goes out and has a heart attack, who is perfectly healthy, but, you know, there was a cat in the gutter type of a thing. And that's exactly what the dentist said that came back. He's like, I had a cat in the gutter, and he was able to see it.
That's it.
Very powerful. So I couldn't agree more.
And we can create some curiosity around that, but I have a story about that as well. The cat in the gutter story is obviously, we know cholesterol makes plaque in your arteries and helps build it. But what causes heart attacks and strokes is excess inflammation. So I ran a 2013 Detroit Free Press Marathon. It was the last marathon I ran. That year, three people died on the course. Wow. And so how do you have marathon runners, you know, dying on the course? And, and so our bodies, and Joel can talk to you, Dr. Khan and other cardiovascular specialists as part of our network, can tell you that we get some big enzymatic release for some time after over-exercising. And sometimes if we're not trained properly, it's not so healthy. So we have to be careful. But the cat in the gutter story is a great one. And I love Brad and Amy for coming up with those cartoons that explain and create such vivid images of how heart disease happens.
It really does. Now, we've had a lot of guests on the show, too, that are all fee-for-service, and the medical coding has offered a lot of insight in how patients can actually get this done. Have you found that to be true, too? And they're encouraging, you know, don't think just in a linear fashion around dental, but, like, it's true, and many of the people in the Seattle Study Club Network, they have found, like, you know, Bob Gottlieb tells a story about an 18-year-old patient who came in, and, I mean, through the story of medical codes, she had her whole entire mouth restored, and she didn't have a penny to her name. Have you found that to be true also, going down that path in education?
I haven't. So that's an area for learning and growth for me. So I'm excited to do that. I can't wait to learn more about it. And I too hear these stories about people being very successful. And what a gift if we could pull that off, because we have cancer patients and we have people who are really deserving that their medical insurance company still thinks the mouth is disconnected. And somehow we need to bridge that gap.
Yeah. And now I'm so grateful that I'm going to have you back for more shows, because I have like 90 more questions. But I get this question all the time, because you hear the word integrative oral medicine come up, but, like, I don't know that we hear a really good definition around that. Can you give us some perspective on what that means and the opportunity that's ahead in dentistry for both dentists and patients? Like, what does that mean to you when you hear those terms?
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of my practice, integrative oral medicine. And so for me, it just means that we have a very keen awareness and understanding of how certain oral conditions affect systemic health. And we have an obligation to look our patients in the eye when they come in and sit in our chair. When I do my new patient exams, I either say one of two things. You have oral conditions that are affecting your systemic health and I can help you with that. Or I can assure you that your mouth is not contributing in a negative way to your systemic health. And it takes a lot of skill, care, and judgment to be able to say that. And I'm proud to be able to say that. And I want to congratulate you for what you're doing, for how you're managing your life. If you have something else to worry about, it's not your mouth today. And so I like to let patients know where they are on that journey. And I want to make sure that I can help them if they have issues that are obviously causing them some downstream damage.
Yeah. See in the next 1 or 2 years as it comes to the learning that we're seeing with all, like I tell everybody, go to Balin Donin's preceptorship course, which I think you've been through, like, and they come back and they go, Kirk, that was life changing. Do you know, sure. What are some of the trends we're going to see, you think, in the next year or 2 years as we go down this path?
I think you're going to see dentists doing more and more things beyond the mouth. And I think you're going to see physicians taking a much more careful role in the mouth. I know physicians that have hygienists in their office doing oral evaluations. I know physicians that are doing salivary sampling and biomarker sampling and then begging for fine dentists that can understand how to read those reports and how to manage that biofilm for them. And so I think we're going to see a lot more intertwined collaboration, and we're going to start seeing physicians being willing to hand off bits and pieces of management to us. I have physicians, when I write letters back to primary care physicians and say to them, can I help manage the sleep apnea, or would you prefer to manage this part of the patient's health? And they say, please, you know, if you can help me, you know, you and a sleep physician do it. So I think that there's going to be a lot more of that, but we have to do it with integrity, and we have to do it with knowledge, and we have to be very cognizant of the burden that the physicians have on their time. And so we have to be respectful. So I haven't been one to go and tell physicians what I can do for them and how much healthier I can make their patients. I'm more for, would you help me? You know, would you help me make this help this patient be healthier? And it's been I've found that to be a really successful approach.
That's awesome. And then bring in the airway piece of this. So, because I get this, I get the same questions you get all the time. That's why I'm asking you. He's like, Kirk, you know, I get it, but like the airway piece, you know, like how do I even integrate all this? Because it seems like dentists now more than ever, like the dots are starting to connect. You can see it with children. And today, yes, in this great country of ours, more 7-year-old kids will be written prescriptions for speed that they'll never be able to get off of. If somebody would just ask more questions and find out that the kid isn't sleeping, you know, instead of that the kid can't focus in class and now they just write a script. I think we're on the cusp of something that's tremendous, you know, but the airway piece is so exciting, but a lot of people just, they see it, but they don't know what to do with it. What are your thoughts on that as we put this piece in here?
Yeah, every patient, Kirk, needs to be screened, and every family needs to be screened. And if you have a young dentist that wants to build their practice, start asking their patients about sleep health and the health of, I ask every patient, if you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, sons or daughters that are snoring or grinding their teeth in their sleep, this is not normal. And so we want to get an evaluation. Now, we know these collaborative networks are difficult to build, and you've had many experts on your program about this area of expertise, and we know we need myofunctional therapists, and we need pediatricians, and we need pediatric dentists, and we need orthodontists, and we need a pulmonologist, and you know, you've had Roger on, and you've had a lot of nice people on the show we know this airway piece takes a collaborative team. Yeah. And that's why my focus is still making sure that patients and practices have dynamite periodontal protocol programs, because that's what they can do that immediately in their practice, and no one can do that but them. But for airway management, we're going to be relying on more interprofessional and interdisciplinary care, and we're going to need other people. So how do we crack that nut? I think one of the things we need to do is we need to network with people that have telehealth systems. And this is what the Wellness Dentistry Network's trying to do, is we're trying to connect practitioners with professionals in a network environment that allows them to interact together where each other knows the same language. That's about it. Because right now there's nothing worse for me to have a young practitioner identify an airway problem on a child, send them to an orthodontist, and the orthodontist says, there's no problem here. You know, we're going to wait till the canines come in before we do anything with the small arch. Or, you know, this is part of the challenge, is getting us to speak the same language and understand this, the same, so that we're on the same page. Nothing more confusing to a patient than going two places and hearing two totally different stories. So I think the airway piece is huge. We're just scratching the surface on how to take care of it, because it applies to every single living human being in your practice.
Now, I know people that are listening to this are going to want to know about this. So for the benefit of people that are listening on iTunes, so tell us about the wellness network that you've created. Like, how does it work? What do you guys do?
Yeah, what happened, I would lecture or share information about how we built a periodontal policy in our practice, and we would use a series of either patient education tools or forms or some tools, let's just call them, that we would use in our practice to help facilitate this process. And people would come out of the audience and say, hey, can I have that form? Can I have this risk modifier form? Can I have this other form? And pretty soon I had 50 Dropbox folders on my computer. And so I decided I would create a small subscription service. And so it's an internet-based resource hub, basically. And now it's grown to videos and quite a bit more. It's wellnessdentistrynetwork.com is where you would go. And it's turned into a lot more. And part of the Wellness Dentistry Network, Kirk, is identifying people in communities that already have the same knowledge base or similar knowledge base as a dentist, so we could team up and create some telehealth people. So we have offices in 5 countries, all across the United States and Canada, over 160 offices now. And we have physicians that can, if you don't have a physician approximated to your location where you live, you can buy that service over the telephone. And that's the idea, because we have to give our patients an option. If I hand someone Beat the Heart Attack Gene and they go home and read it, they're coming back to me and they're saying, where can I get this done? And you either have to get on an airplane, find somebody in your community, or I want to make an opportunity to have somebody be able to do it over the internet or through the phone.
Yeah, what an incredible opportunity, again, as you're trying to differentiate what you do. And really, it all comes back to this, Doug. As a practitioner, what you do either screams, I care or don't care. And what you've been saying this whole time is very powerful. Like, I think it's brilliant to start somewhere like a business card as a book. That is a genius idea, just to say, hey, look, I care about you. I want you to read this, you know, and it's
sign the front cover. Inflammation is everything, you know, best, you know, Kirk.
Absolutely brilliant. Any closing thoughts that you have on this, and last, you know, bits of advice that you would share to a young dentist who might be watching this as they look forward to the future?
Yeah, one little thing that I close all of our webinars with, and I know lots of people have said it, and my friend Bully from Boston reminded me, but you know, a healthy man has a million wishes. A sick man has only one. And I would really like dentists to be able to offer their patients a million wishes. And you know, we all want a bigger boat, a different car, a different vacation. Those are the things I want to wish for. But you know, when you're in a hospital bed, when you lose somebody that's significant to a premature heart attack or a stroke, these sick people just want one thing. They just want another day with their loved ones, or they want more time, or they want better quality of life. And I can tell you, there's no health professional better geared to do that than a dentist.
Amen. So well said. That is powerful, because that's so true. And if you've ever been sick, hunched over a toilet in February with, you know, the flu, your only thought is, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. And it, you know, it's so, so true.
Your biggest asset is your health.
Yep. I heard another dentist who went through cancer in Florida, and he said this to me. He goes, Kirk, you don't really have any problems until you have a health problem. Because really, everything can be fixed. So, buddy, I am so grateful, Doug. And I'm definitely going to have you back, because I didn't even get through half of my questions.
Anytime. I love it. It's great.
So what we're going to do is we're going to put all the links that Doug mentioned in here, as well as the Wellness Dentistry Network. I'm just going to tell you, just get involved with it. You'll absolutely love it. And do us a favor. If you enjoyed today, just hit the share button and share this with your friends. Spread the word on this incredible movement, because dentistry truly is one of the greatest professions, if not the greatest profession ever. So, Doug, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Kirk. I really enjoyed the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah. And for those of you watching, we appreciate you watching. Until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.